Okay, so you guys love to travel. I do. Traveling is one of my passions, but one of the biggest hang-ups is money, right? It's expensive to travel, and it's always been the biggest hurdle. And most of my friends and family would say the same thing, that not only is time a factor, but money, right? It's expensive. So one way that you guys can minimize your travel expenses is through the Corporate Travel Concierge, or CTC. If you go to ctcvacations.com, they will book you at cost. Their goal is to avoid the markup. Their members travel at cost. They are dedicated to sharing public information about the true cost of vacations and allowing travelers from all classes to experience the vacations they didn't know they could afford. Their mission is to make travel affordable for everybody. So check out ctcvacations.com, and the next time you're traveling, book with them, because not only is it the most affordable way to take vacations and travel, but 10% of every deal goes to one of six charities that benefit police, teachers, nurses, the homeless, hospital, and veterans. And yeah, it's tax deductible for family or business, so you can also feel good about what you're doing in addition to saving money and having a great time traveling. So check out ctcvacations.com.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
If you're easily offended, this may not be the show for you.
Whatever happened to the men being able to physically retaliate against the women in WWE? This is a fantasy environment.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. Thank you, everybody, every single person, not just one or two, all of you for joining me on this Thursday, June 6th, 2019. Tomorrow night is Super Showdown for WWE, so I've got a great show for all of you today. And the reason I say it's a great show, even more so than any other show, is because this is the first official show in which I have one of my permanent co-hosts to the show, Ashley, and she joins me today for a very long conversation. We went for, oh my God, probably almost 2 hours. Might be one of the longest running shows ever in the history of the WWE Podcast. But we cover our Super Showdown predictions, our thoughts, and also this week in WWE, covering items from the Sami Zayn debacle of him not winning a match since his return, to the build of Undertaker Goldberg, whether it's worth seeing after 15 years too late, and just so many different things, from the love of the Firefly Funhouse to the 24/7 title nonsense. All of it. And it's not just all bashing. This is all love. It's tough love from two passionate fans. And we do throw in a ton of stuff that we do love. I promise you, it's not just all you guys do is complain. We don't complain. We critique because we love this product so damn much. We also cover Jon Moxley right at the top of the interview, or discussion, I should say. It's a discussion because she's a co-host now. It is a very cool and engaging conversation I think you guys are going to love. I think you might relate to some of the things we say. We have a lot to say in the Jon Moxley interview, with not just Talk is Jericho, but also that other, that other podcast out there that I still listen to because they're damn good. But, that other one out there that did another interview with Jon Moxley, and where Jon Moxley talks about Brock Lesnar and all of his frustrations when it came to that WrestleMania match a number of years ago. So, man, we cover it all. I'm sure there's things that we missed, but we didn't want it to be a 5-hour show. So it is, time just flies when I'm talking with her, and it's a blast. So I think you guys will have a blast listening to this. So without further ado, we'll just get you right into my conversation with Ashley. And next week, obviously, I'll have another show. And on Sunday will be my review show of Super Showdown, as well as my wrestling nostalgia segment as well. So, jam-packed week of wrestling. Hope everyone enjoys Super Showdown, whether you watch it or not. Maybe you guys don't watch it because you protest what Saudi Arabia has done or whatever. I don't know. I don't know your political views. Some people are protesting this pay-per-view, but whatever. I love the product. I'm going to watch it. So, all right, here we go. Ashley and I talking about pretty much everything under the sun when it comes to WWE and the current product. Enjoy. Welcome to the very first WWE podcast edition where one of my co-hosts, permanent co-hosts, is joining me. And that is Ashley, who is no stranger to the show and one of the most requested co-hosts of this show. I had to bring her on. I think we gel really well together. So, Ashley, welcome to your first official permanent co-host position on the WWE podcast.
Thank you so, so much for having me, Matt. I truly appreciate it. And thank you, everyone who voted for me or threw any input in. I really, really appreciate that. That's very humbling. So thank you to everyone.
Yeah, and you were, but you know, one of the top most requested. And I didn't do an official poll. I was more asking people to email me and DM me, and you were one of the top candidates, and I kind of concurred with that, obviously. So welcome to the show. It's really awesome to have you here. I'm looking forward to obviously not just tonight, but the rest of the coming days, weeks, months, and years will bring to this show. And so what I want to do is, for everyone out there, is kind of go through, we're going to run through Raw, SmackDown, some of the highlights, lowlights, and run through the WWE Super Showdown, which is tomorrow night in Jeddah. We don't know the country. It's just Jeddah. Apparently just Jeddah. That is a name of some country out there. And so we'll go through that and see where the night takes us.
Yeah, but it is the equivalent and or greater than WrestleMania. So, you know, there's that.
I forgot about that math equation that WWE gave us. There's just so much truth there. The truth is just oozing out of that statement that they are equating this to WrestleMania. I mean, I completely feel that same way. It's just, it's amazing. I feel like it's WrestleMania season again. And
I know.
Oh, man. So, you know what, to be in all honesty, like, I know what they're trying to do with that statement. I understand them trying to make this feel as big as possible, but it just feels so forced, and it feels like there is just so much money being thrown at this event by Saudi Arabia to tell WWE to say this. It's just so convoluted and forced.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't think that they even believe that slogan. I feel like you said, it is a forced thing. And since they're getting all this money, they had to say something. You know, they had to make it seem like one of the most important pay-per-views or shows of the year without actually giving exact details where it is and things like that or going too much in depth into it. But yeah, I guess in a weird way, I can't blame them, or I just understand the position that they put themselves in and that they find themselves in. So I'd be curious to see next time they go back over there what the slogan will be for the next show. So we'll see about that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, I don't think that when Michael Cole says it, like, I don't think he believes it. It's just such a, like, he's saying it and he's probably rolling his eyes as he's saying it. And it's almost kind of an insult to WrestleMania. Like, even if on paper this card does have some matches that you go, wow, like, I'd like to see that, even if some of them are nostalgic and way past their prime. On paper, it looks like, hey, yeah, this would have been WrestleMania worthy, you know, like a decade and a half ago. So I know what I get it. They're a business, but it's just, it's almost laughable that they're comparing this to WrestleMania. So we'll get to Super Showdown in just a few minutes on the back of the show. But I want to start with what happened this week. And when I say what happened this week, more like actually what last week now. And that is two words, Jon Moxley. And I gave my thoughts on my last show about the whole podcast that he did with Talk is Jericho. And I thought it was really eye-opening, but at the same time just confirms the environment that we all believe WWE is like backstage. So without repeating myself, Ashley, I never got your take. What did you think of this Jon Moxley interview that he did with Chris Jericho?
Yeah, I think, like you said, it did kind of confirm what other reports were out there were saying, you know, the lack of creativity that each individual has for their character and things like that. But I think for me, it was just so eye-opening and just so fascinating to hear his side and his perspective and what he went through without him going into detail over his entire career. I kind of liked how he framed it just from the past, I think it was about a year, maybe a little over a year, from where he was out from his injury and the recovery and all that. And I think the thing that stood out to me the most, one of the things, was when he was going through his rehab and how he said that he, when he was rehabbing and he was on like one of the recumbent bikes or something like that, he likes to watch performances and like concerts and things like that. And he just felt that creativity and that inspiration and just that longing to be that excited to go do something. And that was just so eye-opening to me, because it's sad that you have this billion-dollar company. And to me, we don't know exactly the ins and outs of the operations behind the scenes. We can only speculate. But to me, I always wonder, like, wouldn't it be easier for Vince and the creative team if they had someone like a Jon Moxley put input into their character? I feel like it would be harder for them to script a character. I feel like that character knows who they are, what they see in the future, and maybe bullet points for what they want to do and what their goals are. And then Jon Moxley, for instance, can match his bullet points with their bullet points, and then they can just come to an even ground on that aspect. So to me, that was just heartbreaking that he tried so hard to give his input and to maybe change the direction of his character and for his return, what he was planning and all that. It was really sad. And to think people like who are still there, like maybe a Sasha Banks, where we don't know exactly what's going on with her, but obviously she hasn't been on TV. So just to think that maybe that's something that she's going through right now is kind of heartbreaking.
That's a good adjective to use to describe what Jon Moxley was, that, you know, he's it's just sad. Sad is a good way to put it. And again, as you said, we can only speculate. But at some point, this speculation that gets confirmed over and over and over by CM Punk, by Dustin Runnels lately, who has said that WWE is compared to a prison, and now Jon Moxley, who completely broke the internet and shattered all records on Chris Jericho's podcast, all this stuff, and like you said, it was eye-opening, and it's also concerning, I think. I think it's concerning mm-hmm. to really think that if indeed the majority of the statements that Dean Ambrose, Jon Moxley, has said are true backstage, it is unfortunately a toxic environment that is sucking the passion out of these performers, out of these wrestlers that came to this company to do what they love to do, and that passion is being taken away by the business model that WWE has. And while I would love to see WWE put somebody like Moxley in charge of being able to say, I think my character should do this, and actually use like his suggestion and carry weight with it, not just go, yeah, well, we'll listen to your input, but when the door closes and you walk out of the room, we're just going to go back to what we wanted, which is essentially what Jon Moxley has said that Vince and the creative team did to him over 6 years that he was there. And it's disheartening to hear that. And I don't think WWE is going to blow up their business model, unfortunately, to appease the stars that aren't in that position and aren't on the creative team. And WWE is not putting their faith in the performers. They're putting their faith in these quote writers to come up with what they think this character should be. And you know what, honestly, as much as we like to kill the creative team, there's one man and one man only that Dean Ambrose, Jon Moxley, continued to hammer, and that was Vince McMahon himself. He said Vince McMahon himself was the problem.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the other things that everyone always assumed, because obviously it's Vince's company, so if he wants something to happen or if he doesn't want something to happen, that's what it is. But just to actually hear it and to hear how many times that Jon Moxley would take different ideas to him or say he doesn't want to say this, like with the little red wagon thing. I think that may have been on a different podcast, but in another interview that he did.
We can say just, it was on The Torch. It's fine.
Okay. So on The Torch, just hearing that side of it, in that interview, he got a little more detailed into his situation and what he was going through, and like with the whole story or lack thereof that was his match with Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. That, I think, was the other thing that really stuck out to me over his two or three interviews from that week, was just, man, like, just thinking, because I remember thinking and hearing of that match at WrestleMania, I was like, man, they could really steal the show. Like, they're two hard-hitting guys, like, they're, you know, balls to the wall, like, they're going to want to perform and steal the show. And Brock Lesnar, yes, he gets paid whatever crazy amount of money, but he's going to show up and he's going to, especially at a stage like WrestleMania, he's going to show up and prove himself to be able to continue to be in that situation. So it was just kind of maybe it shouldn't have been as mind-blowing as it was to me, but just to hear, I guess, the lack of input that they both had, or at least that Lesnar had, into building that match and constructing it, and even just listening to ideas, because I think they didn't even go through like a run through or anything of the match until like maybe the night before or the day of, which is just crazy. But it was just, I just felt so bad. I'm just so happy for him, and having him go to New Japan and he won their title over there. It's just, I'm just so happy for him, because like you said, a lot of people that are in WWE right now are just there to collect a paycheck, and they're fine with doing whatever creative or Vince tells them to do. And that's fine if that's what you truly want for your life, your career, and your character. But someone like a Jon Moxley, who probably loves the business more than he loves the paycheck, when they aren't allowed to creatively express themselves, that's just the saddest thing.
It is. And like you said, though, there are a lot of guys, and Dean said, John said, I got to get used to saying John,
right,
said that he knows that there are a lot of guys backstage who are just happy collecting a paycheck. And if you're there for just the money, that's fine. And to be honest with you, like, I mean, I'm at my job because of the money. Like, I'm not there because I love what I do necessarily. I don't hate what I do, but I don't love it. I mean, if you take the money away, you think I'm showing up? No, I'm not.
Right.
So I think Jon Moxley has a true passion for what he's doing, a true, like, gut level, in the middle of his soul feeling, and a genuine passion for what he wants to do, what he envisions his character being. And when he wasn't able to do that, it felt like he was dying a little bit inside every single day being at that company. Not to say that this every single day was a terrible day for him. I'm sure it wasn't. But it was just a steady decline from when he came into the Shield, and then he went solo, and then they just created this goofy garbage that he continued to have to press through and do the best that he could with. And I remember him saying that the breaking point when he knew he was done was, what, a few months ago, when he had that the doctor give him immunizations,
yes,
from all the people that were in the audience. And I mean, I rewatched that segment, and you can now, hearing the interview and then watching it back, you're just thinking the whole time, and you can kind of see it in Dean's face, in his eyes, that he is so done with this. Like, and it is unfortunate that Vince McMahon at 70 years old just cannot connect with the audience that is pouring money into this company, but yet leaving in droves in viewership. And it's unfortunate, because there's so much talent on that roster. There is so much talent, I believe, that is passionate about what they do. And WWE has been equated to a prison by not just Dustin Reynolds, not just by Dean Ambrose. CM Punk seemed to have really broken that seal back in 2012, 2013, we did the podcast with Colt Cabana. It was very similar. If you took that podcast with CM Punk and took that podcast with Jon Moxley, you could draw a million parallels of what they said about WWE, which is clearly still existing from over the last, 7 years since Punk left. So it's just, I really feel for the guys and gals there, but at the same time, it's awesome to see AEW, which could not have been timed any better, to rise up and quote, compete with WWE. Because there is such a passion and a drive and a need from wrestling fans to go back to what wrestling was. I think WWE, Vince McMahon himself, has gotten so far away from what people loved about the product. And you have Vince, who's more about the entertainment than the sport. And I think that AEW is going to fulfill that desire, that need that fans have had now for quite some time.
Oh, 100%. I was very intrigued by the whole AEW announcement from the beginning, because I don't really necessarily view it as it is competition, but I don't think, and I could be completely wrong, but I don't think their main objective is to put WWE out of business, where I think back in the day, WCW's primary objective was. So I think that's going to be one of their major differences in their business outlook. And I think that could be for the best, because if they are going into this with the sole purpose to steal viewers from WWE or put them out of business or whatever that envision could be, I just feel like that's not the best route. And I don't think that's what they're looking for. I think they just want to put on a fun wrestling product. And I think one of the taglines that Cody uses is a business by the boys for the boys. And that's just so cool. Like, already, like, you have that cool aspect. Like, yeah, like, Tony Khan isn't going to be, I mean, as of right now, it could change, but as of right now, he's not going to be a Vince McMahon in the bad sense where he has to have complete control over every little thing. Where, yes, people could argue that Vince's control and Vince's concept and business model over the past however many years has worked, and it obviously has since they're a billion-dollar company, but it's time to change. You have to change with the times. Every company, every business is forced to, whether they want to or they think they need to or not. So I think this is the ideal time for AEW, and just everything lined up so perfectly with their Double or Nothing pay-per-view being in Las Vegas and Jon Moxley living there, just the timing when his contract ended from WWE. It was just, it was like a blessing in disguise.
The timing is like, it's impeccable. It's impeccable. Yeah. If you're AEW, and the key for AEW is going to be able to continue this momentum and interest and intrigue and just everything. Like, they cannot sit back and go, oh, well, you know, like, people really love Double or Nothing. We're good now. We can coast. And I don't think they believe that, but it's just so important for them to continue that and not go away ever from what they believe professional wrestling should be. Should be displayed as, and that is not a Vince McMahon version of poor timed comedy and eye rolling skits, extremely micromanaged, and letting the boys be the boys. You go out on camera and you tell the fans how you feel. There's no corporate speak. There's no telling everyone what to do and where to be. They have, hey, you're going to win tonight, you're going to go over tonight, or whatever. Obviously, they have to have some level of creative, but it's a very overarching. Just basics, and you guys fill in the blanks, and that's the way it should be, and that's what made such everything such a success in the 90s when Stone Cold Steve Austin was there and The Rock and all of that. I mean, there was some managing to a degree, but when you look back, there was no large creative team. You had Paul Heyman on SmackDown as the lead writer. You had Pat Patterson, Vince McMahon, and I can't remember the third, but it was a very small, intimate group of individuals who were on the creative. You didn't have a group of quote writers coming out there with 400 ideas, and it just, yeah, is it a case of too many cooks in the kitchen? I think that's a part of it, but ultimately Vince McMahon is still making these decisions. As bad as the creative may be from the 400 writers they have, Vince McMahon is still the one at the end of the day coming up with these skits and things that are just eye rolling, and he's sitting in the back slapping his knees while some of the audience is groaning. I mean, and like you said, I think one of the biggest things, too, with the match with Brock Lesnar that Jon Moxley had back in, oh, God, I don't even know, it was like 3 years ago, maybe. And it wasn't just creative at that point. It was also Brock was being Brock. The thing is, when you see Brock, why he's so intriguing on TV is because he is who he is. He's not playing anybody. He's a guy that doesn't like people. He comes out and says he doesn't like people. That's who he is. He likes to be by himself. He doesn't want to see anybody, deal with anybody. He's extremely antisocial, but yet he gets out in front of 20,000 people. And he is a complete beast, and he is a legitimate beast. And it's just amazing that you can have a guy who's part-time is overdoing it. I think this is a guy that's like sometimes. I don't even know what you would call Brock, because he's, you know, barely there, at least in the overarching, you know, scope of the deal with the boys there who are there night in, night out. And you have Brock Lesnar, who is calling the shots on the creative, and Brock is allowed to do it, overriding Dean Ambrose, who's been there for how many years, and is, you know, putting his body in the line and offering up to do crazy bumps. So it's just, unfortunately, it's the culture of WWE that needs to change. It's not necessarily the creative team, it's the culture and the way that they approach the micromanaging of their stars and not allowing stars to be the focus. It's the brand. Instead, it's the brand, not the stars, which to be honest with you, that's how you build your brand, is by promoting the stars. So they seem to have a bit of a backwards logic. So AEW, I'm looking forward to it. And I never, you know what? And this is the last thing I'll say about it is, I really think that as much as you may say AEW is competition for WWE, you're right. We should not be looking at it as that, even though it's difficult to do. I don't want either company to ever go out of business. I want as many wrestling organizations to pop up that are successful as possible. It's good for competition, which drives everyone to be competitive and usually ups everyone's game. And it's also a great place for any, like, for the guys and gals who want a place to work. And can feed their families. I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, these are human beings who need to make a living.
100%. Could not agree with you more. And just one more thing on that before we move on to Raw and SmackDown. It's just amazing. And I guess this kind of is a segue into Raw, but talking about Brock Lesnar, just thinking about how over the past, because of course, when I went back and I listened to Jon Moxley's interview, the second one, just thinking about how uninvolved he was. And, you know, not for nothing, we can't fault Brock. It's not like he was being told, hey, you need to be here Monday, and he just wasn't showing up. He didn't have to. He was doing exactly what he was told that he needed to do. Hey, you need to be here this day at this time. And that's what he did. So as much as it's not the ideal situation, especially for a WrestleMania match and things like that, and for the company, we can't fault Brock. Because, and not for nothing, like, if you take your average person and put them in Brock or any of the guys or girls who are there in any wrestling company right now, if they were in Brock's situation, would they do something different? Would they be like, no, I demand to work 100 days a year, 200 days a year? I don't think so. Maybe they will. You know, you do have that few. But we can't really fault Brock too much because, yeah, he put in the time early, I think in like 2002 maybe it was when he first debuted. He put in the time then. He ended up leaving, went to try football, UFC, all that stuff. So he built himself up to this pedestal where he did have that power to negotiate, hey, Vince, I will work for WWE, but I only want to work this amount of days, and that's what they agreed upon. So there's only so much we can fault Brock for because he's doing what he wants because he's allowed to.
Get to Old Navy Saturday only. Women's and girls tanks are on sale for just $2. That's right, just $2. No better tanks, no better price. Just $2. One day only. Saturday only at Old Navy. Valid 6/29. Select styles only. In-store only. Limit 5. Get to Old Navy Saturday only. Women's and girls tanks are on sale for just $2. That's right, just $2. No better tanks, no better price. Just $2. One day only. Saturday only at Old Navy. Valid 6/29. Select styles only. In store only. Limit 5.
And it's so hard. I mean, like, Brock Lesnar is doing exactly what he should be doing. And while he is, and you can't fault him, that's also, ironically, the problem. Because it's viewed as if he only does the bare minimum. He only does exactly what he should do and not a lifting a finger more. And I think that, yes, contractually, he's doing exactly what he should be doing. But in fans' eyes, that's not enough. And in some cases, rightfully so. But if you're looking at this from a business perspective, Brock is beholden to his contractual agreement. But in the eyes of fans who have a passion for what they watch and what they love, and you see guys and gals who are putting it all on the line and go way above and beyond, go the extra mile, 10 miles, 100 miles, and you have Brock Lesnar who comes out there, stands there, and lets Paul Heyman cut a promo and gets paid millions of dollars to show up once a month on Raw and do a couple of pay-per-views a year, you start to draw the resentment. However, if you're in Brock's position to be able to do that, not put your body through hell every night and get paid millions, why wouldn't you? I mean, so there is two sides to this coin, and I think right now Brock Lesnar is doing a very good job being a heel. I'm liking what they're doing. Not everything with Brock. And so let's transition into Raw, because Brock Lesnar was a big part of Monday Night Raw. And what was your take on what happened with Brock, who was advertised all night to be cashing in the Money in the Bank briefcase for the second week in a row? And did he do it? No. However, he did get more physical on Raw than he has in probably the last 4 months. What did you think of all this?
Yeah, so and that's what I was going to lead to with my whole little rant before is, am I going crazy or have we seen Brock for, what, 3 weeks in a row now on Raw? That's got to be some type of record, and I don't even know how long. And because we weren't really, I guess Super Showdown is considered a pay-per-view or a large event, but for the past 2 weeks, up until this week, was it really hammered home that, yeah, he for sure was going to be going to Super Showdown, but he's been showing up almost every week. So that in and of itself is kind of surprising and just kind of eye-opening for me. I don't know if that was a ratings thing or an AEW thing or just something they had planned to begin with, but I never expected him to cash in. And I think the whole concept of him even being forced by, I'm not sure if you saw the video that Stephanie had posted on Twitter, I think maybe this past Sunday or maybe early Monday morning before Raw, but saying how she was upset with Brock and how he's disrespecting the Money in the Bank briefcase and the contract and all that. But why does he even need to tell us when he's cashing in? The whole point of winning that contract is you have that contract in your possession for the next year to cash in whenever you want. Dolph Ziggler never told us when he was going to cash in, and he was never forced to. It was never even a thing where, hey, when are you going to cash in? I think RVD and I believe John Cena were the only people who ever said, hey, I know RVD for sure, but they're like, hey, I'm going to cash in here. But they didn't have to. So I guess if we are going based off of the whole concept of the Money in the Bank contract, Brock doesn't even have to. So why should he? I think that was my biggest thing with this whole storyline, this whole angle, is they're forcing him and saying, oh, he's going to cash in. And granted, they shouldn't be saying that and then not delivering, because they know, you know, storyline or behind the scenes, they know Brock's not going to cash in. It's kind of like a bait and switch type thing. But I don't understand why that's even a aspect and a real like focal point right now.
I don't know. I'm on one hand, I understand why they're doing that. Is it a bait and switch? Kind of. You know, at the same time, you could say that, well, Brock Lesnar is the one who decided to ultimately not cash in. I don't know. I think, yeah, when you have Brock Lesnar out there doing what he did, it was nice to see him getting as physical as he did. That was a nice change. And you're right. Is it some kind of record? Probably. It seems to be once a month, as I said, at most, that Brock shows up, maybe once every 2 months, and then he goes back into his hole. We all think he's destined for, you know, Ultimate or UFC, and then he ends up coming back and wins the Money in the Bank briefcase. But as you said, the deal with Stephanie McMahon, I saw that. I'm not following this, because you kind of made a good point. Like, what is Brock doing that is disrespecting the briefcase? He has no legal obligation to do anything with it for a year. And, well, first of all, the fact that Brock somehow didn't know that he had a year is kind of a little bit beyond me. You could say, well, Brock's just disconnected from everything. He's just in his own little bubble. He goes out there, he just wants to kick people's asses, and then, you know, he just wants to win the briefcase and walk out. It's a little bit hard to believe that Brock Lesnar, who has been in the WWE in some capacity since, what, 2002 he was first debuted? Mm-hmm. Really?
And especially being cashed in on by Seth. Like,
yeah.
Like, I could see if he had never been involved in the whole concept at all, but he was literally cashed in on by Seth Rollins at WrestleMania a few years ago. So you can't tell me that he did. And not for nothing, when he first came to that realization, like, oh, well, you know, I have a year. Oh, what? Right on. I'm going to leave. Like, that kind of made me chuckle, just because it's typical Brock. Like, that's not hard for you to believe. But when you really sit there and think about it, it's like, yo, like, you know the rules and the concept behind this. Like, you know you don't have to make a decision right now. Just ask Brock, like, or Seth, from however long ago it was. Like, he did the same thing too, dude. So why, you know, it shouldn't be that much of a shock.
It's, yeah, I mean, when Brock acted shocked that, I have a whole year? Really? Like, you are getting paid millions of dollars. You don't even know that basic fact? Like,
right.
They're like, what? And then Brock comes out and walks out, and he, you know, is... People are saying it's or Stephanie McMahon is saying it's disrespectful to be acting like it's a boombox. You know, it looks stupid. It's not disrespectful, though. It's just kind of goofy. I don't understand. I'm not following. I'm not a part of the Brock party. I guess, like, I don't know. He's made a T-shirt out of it and whatever. And I'm sure he's selling them. But I don't think it's disrespectful. And even if it was, who cares? You think that's the most disrespectful thing Brock Lesnar's ever done? That's what you're going to take action on? Is him acting like the briefcase is a boombox? And then saying he's going to cash in and then not cashing in. So playing games is apparently disrespectful and warrants Stephanie McMahon to take action, which they never did. She never appeared. And so Brock said he was just going to cash in and then didn't. None of it makes any sense, because Stephanie McMahon never showed up. I think that was a storyline that they probably ended up changing last minute.
Yeah,
true. That was the start of something. And then, oh, wait, now she doesn't need to show up because they're deciding to cash in. Well, there's still not ramifications for what he did for the past 2 weeks, if you deem it disrespectful. The whole thing is just bizarre. So anyway, back to Raw. You know, he ended up destroying Seth Rollins. I mean, brutally destroying Seth Rollins, like to the point of like cringeworthy in a good way. I like that he came out after Seth Rollins was already down. Could he have cashed in and won the Universal Championship right there? Of course he could have. It makes Brock look a little foolish, but everything apparently is supposed to be directed on Brock's terms. And that's the fallback you could say is it's on Brock's terms. Everything's on Brock's terms. When Brock wants to do it, he'll do it. So could he have won? Absolutely. But he said Friday. Do I think we'll actually get a cash in tomorrow night? Probably, just because it's the equivalent of WrestleMania, so we'll probably get a cash in. I don't think he'll win, but we'll get to our predictions later in the show, so there's a little spoiler for you there. But I don't think that we would get a third bait and switch from WWE. I think that this has to be the show when Brock actually cashes in. But I enjoyed the beatdown. It made me want to see Seth Rollins get his revenge, and ultimately, that's what you want to feel, and I felt that.
Definitely, and it sets up Seth Rollins perfectly going into tomorrow's show as the ultimate babyface underdog, being brutally beaten down. Baron Corbin kind of started that, and then Brock came out and finished it, and it just puts Seth in a different light and makes his... I hope and kind of predict, I guess, spoiler, his upcoming victory and title retaining moment even that much more special. So we'll see. I kind of don't think that Brock is going to cash in. I guess maybe we shouldn't get too far into that right now, but I don't see that. I think it's just going to be Seth and Baron Corbin. But yeah, that brutality was insane. I think Seth was even bleeding a little bit on his back, and the whole touch at the end when he was getting into the ambulance and having Becky right there and kind of getting in the ambulance with him just kind of gave it a little bit more of a real life feeling. So that was a nice touch.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, like, as much as we may be hammering WWE for some of their creative decisions, everything's not all bad. Like, that was a good decision. They made their relationship public, so it made sense that Becky Lynch was back there and she was with her boyfriend as he gets hauled into the ambulance. Part of me was thinking Brock was going to show up and give one last beating to Seth while he was on the stretcher. I kept waiting for it and waiting for it. But ultimately, Brock was the beast. Now, Brock is the beast, but he's being the heel that needs help to get Seth down. So it's going to be interesting to see at Super Showdown whether Seth is able to gain an advantage on Brock without the low blow. Now, the low blow has been kind of washed away as, well, it's an equalizer for Seth. Well, it's not an equalizer. That's a cheap shot. But you won't be framed as that if you're the babyface. So I'd like to see somebody take down Brock without having to kick him between the legs. Like, I want somebody to do that. There's too much of that going on. And maybe Vince is like, that's the only way anybody can get an advantage on Brock. He's the beast. How else are you going to – I mean, so I'd like to see Seth, the babyface, be able to legitimately take down Brock, if in fact it's a cash-in, and be able to defeat him soundly and cleanly, although I don't think it's going to happen because I think Brock is with WWE for the long haul here. So now I'm getting a little ahead of myself. So bringing it back to Raw, though, I enjoyed it. I'm a fan of it. And I think Seth is being built very nicely here as that underdog that is the guy that never quits. And I'm looking forward to the match. And that's all I have on that subject right now. You have any final thoughts on Raw with Brock?
No, not with Brock.
Nope. All right. Well, so one other thing I want to talk about, and I tweeted this out earlier too, is that switching gears a little bit to Roman Reigns. Mm-hmm. I'm happy for the guy. I'm happy he defeated cancer. I'm happy he's cancer free. Everything I hear from online reports and quote credible sources is that he's a great guy backstage. I met the guy in person too. He seemed like a really cool dude. And I'm all for it. I like the guy, Joe, whatever. I'm not following how WWE is portraying Roman Reigns right now. And I don't know if it's Roman Reigns not being emotionally invested in this, or if it's the creative or Vince or a combination of all three. Roman Reigns feels completely disconnected right now. Like, I said he's sleepwalking. He's just kind of going through the motions. Like, I don't know where his brain is at when he's walking to the ring. Like, he's cutting promos that, first of all, they didn't even let him cut a promo on Monday Night Raw. They just had Shane immediately interrupt him. they don't even trust him with a microphone right now. I don't know if they're fearful that he'll get booed because they don't have faith in that he can still cut a good promo, or if they're just kind of making him that strong, silent type. I don't know. But Roman is just kind of like, he's just this dude that looks like Vince McMahon's perfect creation of a wrestling character, but he's not connecting with me. Like, he's not getting booed per se as bad as he was prior to the cancer, but I'm not feeling the character. He's just kind of there. He's taking beatings from Shane, and I'll get into that in a moment too. But what do you think? Are you echoing this, like, or am I just like seeing things?
No, 100%. And I think it's a really interesting thing, because seeing him on Monday and Tuesday, just him interacting with Shane and that whole storyline and what they're doing with it, just looking at him, I just feel like there's something missing, more so now than before he originally left. I just feel like, yes, when he first came back, everyone was so, so rightfully happy for him and so supportive. And I think over the weeks that kind of died down, not that anyone's changed their mind on him, but I think it's just now everyone's kind of back to, okay, we're back to the old Roman. But now we don't even want to boo him, because we maybe would feel like a bad person if we booed him. So I'm kind of fearful that he's just going to end up getting, maybe I wouldn't say no reaction, because I don't ever see him not getting any type of reaction, but your basic female younger kids, kind of like a John Cena type cheer, but nowhere near as strong. So I'm just kind of scared for him that that's going to die down, and he's going to lose that aura that he once had, that for whatever reason is just kind of missing right now. And I don't know if it's a creative thing, like you said, between him and Vince, or if he wants to do something different and he can't. I don't necessarily see that with him. More so, I feel like he is maybe the kind of guy, and this is obviously pure speculation, but I think he is the type to just say, okay, you know, Vince says, hey, I want you to go out there and say this, this, and this. He's like, okay, cool, gotcha. He may think that a line or two is stupid or whatever, but I think that he's pretty much a team player in the sense that he'll do whatever he's told, because like he said in interviews before, he's there to make millions, which is cool. You know, good for him. He's put in the time, hard work, dedication, all that good stuff, and he deserves it. But there's just something missing, and I don't know what it is. And it's just one of the more intriguing things, I think, going on in WWE right now, is just the lack of, I don't want to say the lack of drive, maybe, but just there's something missing with him, and I can't pinpoint what it is. And luckily, he's with Shane right now, because if he was with maybe just Drew, if it was just him and Drew one-on-one, I'd be kind of fearful that Drew would be, being the heel, that he would be getting more cheers than Roman, or it would be more of a 50-50 playing field.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never really thought about that he's actually feels more disconnected now than before his cancer. And that's concerning. I mean, before his cancer, he was getting booed heavily, blah, blah, blah. It was a typical Roman reaction. Comes back, people love him. And now it's kind of like, all right, you're back, cool. Good to see you. And then, like you said, he's on Raw. He's on SmackDown. He invokes the wild card rule, which don't even get me started on that. He gets invokes himself on that every single week. And, you know, they're clearly trying to build around him in some respects. But he's, again, and what may be missing is that it factor, that intangible of, I don't feel like you want to be here. Like, I don't feel your passion. I'm right. Not connecting with what you should be feeling. Or it's just kind of like he's stone-faced half the time.
Yes.
Like, where's your emotion? Where is your emotion? And somebody actually tweeted me, I don't remember who it was, and said, oh, he's still on cancer meds, you know? And I said, well, wait a minute. So you're telling me that
no.
WWE doctors and his doctors cleared him medically to go through a steel cage and take chair shots,
right,
and do anything in the ring, but he can't emote through his promos? He can't show any emotion? They just said, nope, you're null and void. You are not clear to show any emotion. I mean, come on.
And with something as serious as that, there's no way, first, that they would even let him think about coming back or even traveling, let alone to getting in the ring competing. If he is still on any type of medication, that's fine, but I don't think it would be, not to downplay anything at all, but I don't think it would be that severe where it's affecting him emotionally and physically, because you can see it. Like, he's just not engaged. So I think if it was anything that mind-altering, I don't think that he would be anywhere clear, especially with the wellness policy as it is today, to go out there.
No, nowhere. They wouldn't let him step foot in the arena if he wasn't medically cleared. I mean, like, and you know what? Props to WWE for implementing the wellness policy. As late as it may have been to the game, it's there and it should be there. And I think it helps out the boys and girls big time in their health and their long-term care. And that's awesome. So, you know, props to them for that. So that whole, oh, he's on meds, like, really, I mean, like, that makes no sense. So as much as he may be, and I'm sure he is, I'm sure that the cancer just doesn't go away overnight. Like, you have to probably wean yourself off of meds or whatever. And that's whatever. Like, I don't, my problem with Roman, and I want to see him succeed. Like, I am a Roman Reigns fan, but I want to see him successful as a heel. I've made this case for like 5 years now. Like, I want to see him successful as a heel who then the fans get time to just boo the hell out of. I think he's got a hell of a lot of money as a heel. And then he ends up flipping and the fans love him. And I would even cheer for him at that point.
Get to Old Navy Saturday only. Women's and girls' tanks are on sale for just $2. That's right, just $2. No better tanks, no better price. Just $2. One day only. Saturday only at Old Navy. Valid 6/29. Select styles only. In-store only. Limit 5. Get to Old Navy Saturday only. Women's and girls' tanks are on sale for just $2. That's right, just $2. No better tanks, no better price. Just $2. One day only. Saturday only at Old Navy. Valid 6/29. Select styles only. In-store only. Limit 5.
But the WWE has, Vince McMahon has refused to take that road. It's a huge mistake. It has been a huge mistake since day one. They should have flipped him back when the Philadelphia crowd destroyed him at that Royal Rumble, and they would have had the hottest heel in years, or maybe even over a decade. Maybe since Triple H was a heel, who was one of my favorite heels of all time. Like, you would have had a heel that was for the ages, and they just said, nope, 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 we're going with this, we're going with this, we're going with this. But not to get too much off on a tangent, because I could go forever on the Roman Reigns heel turn, and I think it's been dead, buried, and you know, you got a tombstone for it at this point. I think they lost a lot of money with Roman as not turning heel, and now that he's just continuing to just come back, he's kind of that same guy. He's just, and he, like you said, though, he's with Shane McMahon, and I've said over and over that I don't think Shane belongs in the ring with anybody that is considered a world-class athlete. I'm going to put that aside because I'm tired of saying it. I still don't agree that Shane should be in there on equal footing with any of these guys. So I'm going to take that nonsense and put it aside because that it just boils my blood. But that aside, he's in a program with Shane McMahon, who I think is very good as a heel. I like Shane as a heel more than a babyface. He is born to be a heel. I think he's doing a better job as a heel. He's kind of gotten life breathed back into his character as a heel. He's a McMahon. And as a McMahon, you are almost born as a heel out of the womb. And
crazy.
It's awesome to see Shane as a heel. I think he's doing a great job with his cronies and taking out Roman brutally 2 weeks in a row, using the spear against him. And I have actually, as kind of dead on his feet, he kind of looks like the undead from, you know, Game of Thrones. He's just kind of there. As dead as Roman may seem, I still, unbelievably, want to see Roman beat the holy hell out of Shane McMahon. So I think that's a testament to Shane McMahon's performance as a heel thus far.
Yep, couldn't have said it better myself.
So, I mean, moving on, though, because I'm going to get on a Roman Reigns tangent. I get myself stuck on his character. What do you think about Lars Sullivan? Obviously, he had his first interview this week on SmackDown, but what's your take? And I liked his interview. It was, I think, better than I could have expected. Was a little bit weird. Like, it wasn't very straightforward. No, I enjoyed it. I was engaged. I was listening to his words because he hasn't spoken yet. So what was your whole take on his first promo and his feud with the Lucha House Party?
So, first of all, I'm not a fan of the Lucha House Party at all. I've just never gotten into it. I don't think that being baby faces, they should be three against one or two on anyone, but that's besides the point. When I was listening to Lars's promo on Tuesday, when he went off on the first couple sentences and he said a few key words, I immediately flashed back to Kane. I think his promo just eerily reminded me of Kane circa around the time, I can't remember the exact year, but right after Kane took off his mask, I want to say 2003, I could be wrong, but right when Kane took off his mask and he didn't have to talk with the voice box thing, or he was just talking like as regular as Kane could be, a regular human being, just the verbiage and the words that Kane would use back then, especially in his feud against RVD, hearing Lars talk this week, I just got flashbacks to Kane. I think it was a decent promo, kind of what I expected from him. He looks the part 100%. Like, he looks like a you-know-what heel, and that's good. That's what they need for both shows. Maybe SmackDown more so than Raw right now, but I was really into it. It was pretty refreshing, I guess, first of all, just to hear him speak, and just to give him a little bit more diversiveness in his character, just because it was getting kind of old just seeing him come out, beat up Lucha House Party or anyone else, and then be done. So I'm glad he actually said something. It was kind of weird. It kind of didn't really make sense. Like, we don't really know what his goal is right now, but it was fine for what it was.
Yeah, I've never made that comparison with Kane, but that's not a bad one. And you're right. I actually was looking it up as you asked when Kane demasked, and that was June 23rd, 2003, after he faced RVD. He turned heel. He chokeslammed RVD. So yeah, 2003. A good call. I can see that, and I never thought about it. I don't want to think of him as Kane, but I can see the parallels of that with Kane. I think this guy has a bright future. I don't want to see him take the Braun Strowman path, however. Right. I don't mind squash matches, although very helpful for the upbringing of Braun Strowman, was unfortunately very one-dimensional once they got to Braun Strowman facing additional more formidable opponents. They never really did with anything with Braun beyond I'm big man who tosses big things. Like, he just kind of came this big oaf that was powerful and could lift big things and do wacky stuff, but they stopped there. And I don't want them to do that with Lars. I want him to develop more than just this one-dimensional freak, one-dimensional I'm unbeatable. Like, give us your backstory. Where did you come from? How did you become this? What was your childhood like? Like, there's things you can do to make a character have legs other than just I'm big man that makes big things, like, and picks up big things. Like, you can do things that, and I think that they will, and I hope they do, that they don't just follow in the footsteps of Braun Strowman's success, because I think Braun Strowman's success has been tampered big time by not adding to his character. And Lars Sullivan, does he have a lisp? Yeah, he has a little bit of a lisp. And is that a little distracting? Yeah, it's a little bit distracting. I kind of got used to it when Jack Swagger had that. I'm not trying to be like, he has a disability, but it is distracting when you're first watching him. I think that he can overcome that if he's able to. Well, you can't avoid S's. It's like impossible. Yeah. But you could just, through your actions, through the way you deliver your promo, minimize people being distracted by it. Because it's an element. Let's just face it. It's an element of his promos. It just is. And I think that he's not going to be a huge promo guy, I think, for now. I think it's going to be mostly just come out, destroy stuff, maybe give some really weird facials and all that stuff, and do a lot of talking through body language, which is fine, and give the occasional promo. So I'm a Lars Sullivan supporter right now. Like, I'm on board with what they're doing. Am I a Lucha House Party fan? No. I mean, like, outside of the, six kids in the audience that are going lucha, right. I mean, like, so let's be honest, they're just they're Vince McMahon stuck them together because they all got masks on and they're all luchadors, and that's about it. Like, I don't even know what a Lucha House Party is. Like, are they at an actual house? Like, what are they doing at this? Like, I mean, like, it's just crazy. They just, and I don't know what they are or who they are. They're just nothing more than sacrificial lambs for Lars Sullivan at this point, and that's fine. That's fine, because Lars needs to be at this level right now as they continue to build him.
For sure.
So, let's see. What some other talking points on Monday Night Raw? I had Becky Lynch, who, man, I'm trying to bring some good stuff to the party here. And, well, look, I love Becky Lynch. I think that she is one of the biggest success stories of the past year, if not inarguably the biggest success story of professional wrestling from 2018 to 2019. She seems to have cooled off a bit, and I understand there's ebbs and flows and cycles to characters and all of that, and she lost the belt to Charlotte, ultimately to Bayley, on the last pay-per-view. And I get that. I understand all that. Yeah, I don't disagree with it. I think that she didn't need to have two belts. I think that a belt needs to be removed from her to put the focus on other guys and gals, or other gals, I should say, that are trying to compete for a championship. So I'm fine with her losing the belt. The problem with, though, like, is that they seem to be cooling on Becky Lynch. And she somewhat acknowledged this on Monday Night Raw. And, you know, said that she's become a little bit content. And she doesn't want to be content because that is the ultimate kiss of death when it comes to progressing as a person, as a competitor, and all of that. And she's right. So she kind of acknowledged her lack of momentum over the last couple of months since WrestleMania up until now. And, you know, I'm thinking, like, is this credited to Ronda Rousey being such a good dance partner for Becky? Like, as much as we booed Ronda Rousey, it was really good to have her around to have Becky bounce off of. Those two had a really good chemistry. So what are your thoughts on Becky this past week and in general over the last month?
Yeah, and I think what you just said there is a really good point, and I actually hadn't thought about that. I was always – Ronda, when she first debuted and signed WWE, I was stoked. I was the biggest Ronda fan, always been a Becky fan as well. So I was kind of torn as to who I would support more. But definitely love them both. And I never actually thought about – the impact that Ronda leaving or taking a break right now would have on Becky's character. But I think you're 100% right in that aspect. But I think that kind of shines a light onto another problem right now is outside of course, Ronda and Charlotte, who does Becky have to play off of as a heel? And I think that's why Becky has cooled down because, yes, when Becky was the hottest, she was going against Ronda, who wasn't technically a heel the entire time. She, of course, I guess you could call it turned shortly before WrestleMania, which was obviously for the best. But yes, Becky has cooled down, but it's really, you can't really blame this, that you can't blame Becky as, well, the person and the character, because she doesn't have a strong heel to play off of. Lacey Evans, I think, has potential in the long run, and I think her promo skills and her mic skills are very good. She seems like a natural. She seems very comfortable speaking. Her in-ring work needs some more work, but hey, she hasn't even been with the company for that long. Do I think she should have been put in this position right now? No, but they really didn't have a choice, partly in blaming themselves because they didn't have another strong opponent for Becky outside of Charlotte Flair. And it was getting to the point where how many times are we going to see Charlotte and Becky? It's kind of like Randy Orton and John Cena from back in the day. It's like, we can only see this match for so many times before no one cares, regardless of who's in the match. So I liked Becky's promo on Raw. I think it was refreshing to hear her actually acknowledge that and kind of speak to it and just acknowledge in and of itself that it is bothering her and she's, you know, she wants to keep fighting forward, you know, and all that stuff. So I was totally down for that, but I'm just kind of concerned where does she go after this, especially since she's just on Raw now? Because who else does she have to fight against? Alexa Bliss, but Alexa Bliss is now challenging Bayley on SmackDown for the SmackDown Women's title at, I think it was Stomping Ground, the new-ish pay-per-view that's coming next month. So it's like, where does Becky go from here?
I don't know. I understand that. I mean, after WrestleMania, things are just, they cyclically go down. I mean, like, it's typically when things kind of cool down, it's the hangover of WrestleMania, you're trying to get back into the groove, okay, the big event's over, and you go into some feuds that are, you know, kind of the opposite of WrestleMania worthy, and you're just trying to build new stars, and I'm totally on board for that. That's the time you do it. That's when you bring up new talent, you begin new programs with new stars, and I'm on board for that completely. But it just seems as if Becky Lynch has gone from white hot to just kind of like, and the fire's still on, but, you know, it's barely keeping my hands warm. Like, it's there, but, man, like, it seemed as if, and I don't know if this is just irony or what, that Becky Lynch was the hottest when WWE was not behind her as a babyface. And the second they go, oh, we got this, we're going to make her the best babyface, the fans went, what are you doing? And it's like, and it's just, it's amazing that when they try to turn someone heel and the fans get behind them organically, they can get behind a character that they said, no, this is the girl we want. This is the character that we say is the top of the brand. And WWE at the time was like, nope, it's Charlotte Flair. And so when the fans or WWE gets suddenly behind the person that they're cheering for, it's almost as if you could say, oh, well, they're just rebellious. They're going to go against whoever they feel WWE is supporting. And that's not the case. I think in some cases, WWE just doesn't know how to produce a successful babyface in 2019, or Vince McMahon doesn't. So I think you can attribute some of it to the WWE machine behind Becky Lynch, and some of the promos she's had, even leading up to WrestleMania, weren't the greatest. I mean, she the night after the Rumble with her face-to-face with Ronda, I think was the peak of the entire rivalry with Ronda.
Oh, yeah, that was epic.
It was amazing when she stood in front of Ronda Rousey and said that I told you I'd come looking for you, Ronnie. And the crowd was going crazy. Charlotte wasn't even in the equation at that point. I still don't believe she should have been. They just wanted her in there so they could say that Charlotte Flair was in the main event of the first ever women's main evented WrestleMania, blah, blah, blah. And I know why they did it, but I still don't agree with it. And so it just is, she's cooled off. She doesn't have Ronda. She goes from Ronda Rousey to Lacey Evans. I mean, no disrespect to Lacey Evans, but she is still new to the main roster. I like her on the mic. She's, I think, very, very good for her where she is in the pecking order of where she probably should be on the mic. I'm liking her tone. I like her pacing. You can understand what she's saying. She doesn't talk too fast. So she's got a unique gimmick. She doesn't look like the rest of the women. She's solid in the ring. Like she's fundamentally sound. She's got a unique character. She just hasn't been there long enough for people to really connect with her yet. And so you go from Ronda Rousey, the baddest woman on the planet, the UFC megastar, freshly turned heel that the fans can boo the hell out of in WWE, to Lacey Evans. And again, it's just Lacey Evans is just the new girl. So I think that's also a part of it.
For sure. Yep. And one more thing on Raw before we move on to a little bit of what happened on SmackDown and our predictions. The Firefly Funhouse.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. At the very first segment that aired about a month or so ago now, maybe a little bit longer, I was like, what is this? Has Vince gone crazy? Like, what is Bray doing? Like, I was just like so confused by it. But then I watched it back maybe two or three times later that night after Raw ended. I was like, man, this is actually kind of cool. And I feel like that, to me personally, Becky seeing whatever they do with Seth and the Firefly Funhouse is what I look forward to the most on Raw. And I think this week's segment of it was just magic. The dance thing was kind of weird, but kind of like in a cool way, just kind of like fun. Like it was just, it's believable for Bray. Like Bray is crazy, especially with this new character. He has two sides to him. It's clear. And I love the whole, when he's dancing and then he says, oh, what did he say? I think I wrote it down. Oh yeah. Erase your mind. Like, how he can just split from going to dancing, shaking his butt and all that stuff to just completely going 180 and just saying, erase your mind, giving us that little input and then just going right back to it. And then the references to Huskus the pig, of course, Husky Harris back in the early, early days of NXT, and then having the whole little Vince doll character thing and threatening to say like to fire Huskus if he doesn't change. And then Bray just putting a hold to that. I think that was actually tying into a real life situation. I think I could be wrong, but I think Husky Harris was on the lower end of the totem pole back in the early days of NXT, where they didn't really believe in him or they didn't see much for him. And he completely revamped himself, his character, and just really embraced what he envisioned himself being. And I think the segment this week really tied into that and kind of shone a light, maybe indirectly, or maybe not indirectly, but your average person wouldn't see that. Or if they didn't watch wrestling few years ago, they wouldn't really pick up on that. They would just think it's Huskus the pig. But for us, and it's one of the things that I've been just clamoring for, just having a payoff or something and having us feel good. We're like, hey, I remember that from back in NXT, like back however many, 5 years ago or however long it was. Just, it just kind of made me feel good. Like, hey, they're actually recalling something from the past. Maybe if they're not blankly stating it, but it was just kind of cool.
Absolutely. And as much as we may have slammed Vince McMahon over the last 45 minutes, I think that this is definitely the brightest spot of Monday Night Raw. Every week that I look forward to is the Firefly Funhouse. It's no secret. You guys listen to my show. Like, I love it. And people say, oh, how does this translate into the ring? And even I've been concerned about that. But you know what? Like, I'm not concerned about that right now. Like, I am loving, as much as I say that I love the sports part and not so much the entertainment part of sports entertainment, like, this is the entertainment part that I actually enjoy right now. Like, it is just, it's so well done, and props to the production team for this. Props to Bray Wyatt himself, who has come up with a lot of this and was the brainchild for this entire thing. He came up with The Fiend. He's got that just really legitimately, and I'm 34 years old, legitimately scary mask. Like, if I saw that, like, I would be scared.
Oh, in for real sure. Life.
Like, that is legitimately a very well done, professional looking mask. It's not like you went to Spirit Halloween and picked it up, you know, for $10. Like, that looks awesome. So I'm loving the Firefly Funhouse. I think that all those little nuggets and Easter eggs that he's dropping in every single one of his shows, if you will, are really cool. As you said, it kind of rewards us for watching him back in, 2010 when he debuted in NXT with Cody Rhodes. I really, really enjoy what he's doing because it's so deep. It's there's so many layers that we still need to peel back. Like, we have more questions than answers, and that's always a good thing when you do. And it's not just like, oh, this is too much. Like, I've seen enough. I know everything. In this case, like, our brains are craving to learn more about what he's doing.
Get to Old Navy Saturday only. Women's and girls' tanks are on sale for just $2. That's right, just $2. No better tanks, no better price. Just $2. One day only. Saturday only at Old Navy. Valid 6/29. Select styles only. In-store only. Limit 5. Get to Old Navy Saturday only. Women's and girls' tanks are on sale for just $2. That's right, just $2. No better tanks, no better price. Just $2. One day only. Saturday only at Old Navy. Valid 6/29. Select styles only. In-store only. Limit 5.
Like, what's the end game? How is this going to translate into the ring? Like, and people are saying, too, I've heard on so many different other shows that, like, oh, they're going to, he's got to be a heel. Well, why? People are loving this.
No, like, yeah, I think he's going to be one of those great characters where maybe one day or one week he is, or he comes out with his sweater and everything, and then whatever they, you know, the lights go out in the arena or whatever it is. I think he's going to be one of those rare characters that he can go back and forth, and you can go from literally hating him or not liking what he's doing to just kind of like having that love for him, like, okay, and supporting him. So I think he's going to be that rare exception.
I totally agree. Like, I could see him, like, once, I don't know how many more weeks of these vignettes we have, but I mean, like, I don't really care. Like, I'm loving it every week, but eventually they're going to probably do a promo that says, like, either he'll say, I'll see you next week, and then he's promoted as appearing live on Raw the following week. Like, eventually he's going to have to appear live, and I think it's going to be in his sweater vest, and I think people are going to cheer the hell out of him. I think people are going to go crazy for him. Not a Stone Cold level pop, but it's going to be a very positive reaction when he appears live in that sweater vest. And then I think that we'll get glimpses of maybe like flashes of that mask on screen or something like that. Like, he says he's learned to control this and harness it. I think that's a cool deal where he could be this Mr. Rogers and then be the Fiend, be that demonic character that is hopefully nothing like the old Bray Wyatt, because I wasn't really on board with it. I didn't really understand his whole riddle rhyme deal every week. So I think that this is something that is a dual character, a little bit of a Cactus Jack Dude Love and a Mankind deal, a little bit of that, but also this demonic kind of children's co-host character deal. It's so many layers. I'm just loving it. So eventually it'll appear live, and I think the crowd's gonna love it. So but moving on, one last thing on Raw though, Undertaker appears. I don't really have a whole lot to say about this, other than he kind of said his standard, he's gonna basically take Goldberg's soul. He wants the old Goldberg, he doesn't want the family man. And obviously we get the same on SmackDown with them going face to face. So kind of bleeding into SmackDown though now. Like, what do you think of this Goldberg Brock Lesnar or Goldberg and Undertaker program promo and the whole deal?
I mean, obviously the whole reason this match is even a thing is because it's in Jeddah. It's for Super Showdown. So I think we all know the true reason why it's actually happening. I'm not crazy excited for the match itself. I think Undertaker's promo on Raw was fine. I think he actually said more than what I expected him to say. I just figured he was going to come out and say, Goldberg, you're next, and be done with it. I think Goldberg had a really strong promo, though, on SmackDown. I was surprised. He had a little bit of fire to him. He looked like he really wanted to be there, and he's invested as much as he can be in the short build and the time that they had for it. But I'm not terribly excited for it, but I'm curious to see how it unfolds and if it's gonna and how long the match is gonna be. Because obviously Goldberg was never known for his great technical skill, but he was decent in the ring. You know, he was believable, tough guy. You know, like a Brock Lesnar type in the ring, just gives you that edge and that hard hitting feel. And Undertaker, love him to death, he's probably my favorite wrestler, or one of them of all time, but he's not at the point where he can go and carry a match. And obviously he has more experience than Goldberg does. So I'm interested to see the match. It's weird seeing Goldberg come out with no fireworks, though. That was the one thing that really stood out to me on SmackDown. I was like, man, like, not having that pyro there is just really, really hurts a character like Goldberg. Because that was one of the coolest things, seeing him come out and stand in the fire and breathing the smoke and all that. I'm sure we'll get that for a tomorrow show, but that was just kind of like something that stood out to me as well. But I think they did fine with the promo and they did what they needed to do for the match. And I think it'll be fine.
Yeah, that stood out to me. Like, it was just weird. It's almost like akin to Undertaker just coming out with the lights on. Like, it was something that is just so critical to his entrance, and we didn't get it. And he's standing there, and I'm like, oh, they're not going to give him fireworks, are they? Apparently it wasn't in the budget. I don't know. I mean, they just got away from pyro, but obviously we'll get it in Jeddah. Yeah, look, they are doing the best that they can with something that is, we have all said it 100 times, it's 15 years too late. And it is. Look, it is. But we're getting it. And honestly, I'd rather have this than nothing. You know, as dated as these guys may be, you know, and as unable to perform at the level that they could have, you know, a number of years ago, we all understand that. I get it. I mean, I'm going to just look at it for what it is and appreciate the fact that we're even getting this. Because, you know, is this a dream match? Yes, it is. But obviously these two are more Undertaker than Goldberg, are kind of former shells of themselves. It's just what it is. And I think that Goldberg is still in hell of a good shape. I think Goldberg is in better shape than he's probably been in like 15 years. Like, you can tell he is still jacked.
Oh,
you
for
can
sure.
tell that Goldberg still goes to the gym. He's still doing his workouts. And he put in a great effort on SmackDown to make this feel important, not be that family man. And ironically, he says he's not going to be the family man, and then immediately gets out of the ring and goes like and like hugs some little kid. And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, come on. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, you just said you weren't going to be that soft family man, and yet you go hugging him, kissing babies immediately after. But
right.
Whatever. I mean, like, I appreciate their effort. I think they both know that all the fans know that this is a little late and they don't expect a 5-star classic. I don't. I think this match is probably 8-9 minutes or less, and as it should be. It's got to be a lot of slow-moving power moves. I don't even know who to put over in this one. I'll get to that in a minute. But I'm just appreciative that they're even doing this, and that's all I can even say about this match.
Yeah, and I guess, should I just give my prediction on it now, or do you want to hold off on that?
We'll get to that. Let's just finish up SmackDown. Let's finish up SmackDown. There's only a couple more items here.
Yeah.
And then, I know, because I'm like bursting at the seams to give my predictions too. So let's, all right. The only other things I had, Rey Mysterio, but that was on Raw with him just kind of like, Rey Mysterio, I'm going to touch on that quick. I know not really SmackDown, but he decided to relinquish a title. Now, forgive me, the last time anybody relinquished a title, it just goes to somebody else?
Right.
I mean, like, how does that work? He didn't say who that decision was. It seemed like it was Rey's to relinquish the belt to a guy that has been tormenting his family? I mean, since when is that a thing that the heel is just given the belt from a babyface who's relinquishing that belt? I'm not following that.
Yeah, that relinquishing the title, 100% get. You're injured, you can't defend it, fine. But never have I seen, especially for a babyface, to just hand it over to a heel, especially to this guy who literally was stalking your son and threatening to do harm to your son and to your family, and you just give him the title because he technically didn't lose since his shoulder was up. That may be very well true, but that's not Rey's decision. I just wish if that's what they were going to go with, and obviously it was, they would have been like, or Rey would have said, hey, I spoke to Shane, since Shane's the bad guy. Hey, Shane is making me give this over. You know, of course, word it however he's going to word it, but I'm forced to give you back this title since your shoulder wasn't down and, you know, whatever. But I did not like that at all.
It just, I mean, I understand like that Joe's a heel, and you could say, oh, that guy didn't even deserve it. He just was handed the belt. Well, it hurts the belt, too, because you're putting the belt at really under the bus for just trying to get heat on Joe, which Joe can do by himself with a single promo. He is so good on the mic. And it's just unfortunate they never gave or haven't given Joe a major title run with the WWE Championship or Universal Championship for that matter. I really hope at some point before Joe's prime is completely gone that they do that. But all right. So a couple more things that I like, and then we'll get on to the Super Showdown predictions. I'm liking the 24/7 title. I have to say, and you know what? I've expected myself to like it for a short period of time, and right now I'm in that short window. How long it lasts, I don't know. We all know it's not a serious title. I understand that we're not supposed to consider it a serious title, and it's not. And R-Truth is the perfect guy to hold that championship. I'm loving the antics that are going on, not just on camera, not just on Raw and SmackDown, but also on social media, especially with Drake Maverick, who is just obsessed and incensed in getting his hands on R-Truth, who keeps slipping through his fingers at every turn. I mean, I personally do enjoy, just, is it a little bit of a comedy? Yeah, but I think it's actually done well because R-Truth is gifted in comedy, and when you give it to a guy that is gifted naturally, it comes across much better than trying to force an athlete to do comedy. So I'm liking R-Truth. I'm liking the Drake Maverick deal. What do you think?
I'm right there with you. I wasn't even that negative when they first announced it. Yes, we can pick it apart all day. That could be a whole another podcast in and of itself. But I think the concept, it's not meant to be a serious title, obviously. And I cracked up when they did they made this video on YouTube where R-Truth was at the golf course with Carmella and Jinder Mahal showed up. And that was just so funny to me. Like, I don't know what it says about me, but I just thought that was just so hilarious because if it was going to happen to anyone, of course it would be R-Truth. I think this title is perfect for R-Truth's character because I don't even know how long he's been there now, but he's definitely one of those guys who deserves to be featured on the show in some way. And he had his run with the US title, however short it was. And, you know, I think they could have done more with his character, maybe on a more serious side, but man, that guy is funny. And you just, anything that happens to him in this 24/7 title situation, you don't even really think twice about it. Like, of course you can nitpick, oh, well, why was Jinder in his wrestling attire? But for that, like, okay, Jinder had a plan. Obviously he had the ref. He knew he was going to go try to find R-Truth and win the title. So of course he's going to be ready. R-Truth wasn't in his gear. He wasn't ready. He was in regular street clothes and neither was Carmella, I believe. So it's just funny. And I think, out of all the negative things in WWE right now, this is just something where you don't really have to put that much thought into, and you can just take it for what it is. And what Drake Maverick is doing right now with the one-up posters, I just think that's just another awesome piece to this crazy puzzle.
I'm, you know, the fact that he came in his wrestling gear on a golf course actually added to the segment.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it was hilarious that he's out there like, what are you doing on a golf course? Like, you don't even need to be in your actual gear to get the title. Like,
right.
And it was hilarious.
It was so funny.
On a golf course, how do you not see somebody coming? Like, and a golf course is one of the most open things that you can be in. And R-Truth still somehow did not see Jinder Mahal coming.
Right.
The whole thing, I mean, like, it's zany, it's wacky, it's a little bit of Vince McMahon humor. Yeah, but sometimes Vince McMahon can hit it right. And with this, I think he's hitting it right.
Mm-hmm.
Because R-Truth is the perfect candidate for this. And I hope they continue with R-Truth as champion for as long as possible. And they're doing this deal now where he loses it at the beginning of the night and ends up winning it at the end. Like, fine, I'm fine with that.
Right.
He ends up pinning who was it underneath the ring this past Monday night to retain the championship?
Was it Elias?
Elias. He ends up winning under the ring without even seeing it on camera and reclaims the belt. I just saw some footage in the past like hour of him on a plane with Jinder Mahal. So I mean that's some new piece of footage that I haven't seen the whole thing yet. But so there is unlimited places and things that you could do with this, and the opportunity for being creative with this is unlimited. So they could really get a lot of mileage out of this, especially with R-Truth. So I'm really looking forward. It's kind of like the guilty pleasure of the Firefly Funhouse. Like, this is one of those things that I look forward to every single week.
Same here.
So one last note that I want to touch on, and then we'll get to Super Showdown, is Sami Zayn. And, like, what are they doing with Sami Zayn? Like, I love – so here's the good. Let me give you good and bad. I love Sami Zayn right now. I love what he's doing with the Critic of the Critics. I think that it's coming from a real place from him, and obviously management using him as kind of the speak-through conduit guy that, hey, we're going to fire back at the fans, but do it in a way that looks like it's just Sami Zayn changing characters and being Critic of the Critics. So I think it's a little bit of both, that they're actually firing back at fans using Sami Zayn. And I think Sami Zayn is a great promo. I love his music. He's an obnoxious heel. Him and Kevin Owens as a team are awesome. All of that. Now, that's where it stops, because since Sami Zayn has debuted as the Critic of the Critics, has he won a match?
Like, no.
He has not won a single match and continues to take the fall even when he's in a tag team match. Like, so what? I'm not sure what WWE is doing with him. They repackaged him as the Critic of the Critics, and it's gotten a lot of success. A lot of people are talking about it on social media, a lot of buzz, which is what they want. They want buzz, and they got it. And then he doesn't win a damn. He doesn't win at all.
Right. And I think if you're just going to have him lose, then why even have him wrestle to begin with? You know, like, because it just diminishes what he's saying in a way, because he's saying that, you know, we are the critics. We're horrible. We judge the product too much. We think we're always right. Fine. You know, that's what you're going to say. That's fine. You know, whatever. But to go out there and lose every single week that you have a match, it's like, well, like, why? Like, what's the point? I think him losing, and I think Kevin Owens losing as much as Kevin is just, I think Kevin more so than Sammy for me, is just really frustrating, because Kevin is such a good heel. I think he could be a very good babyface, and I think he could have if he had the opportunity to maybe go on that babyface run for a little bit longer. But, man, Kevin could be one of the top heels, if not the top heel, because he's an awesome talker and he can go in the ring. And to have him lose constantly, whether it's a one-on-one match or a tag match, it's just kind of frustrating, because they could be doing so much more with both of them, definitely, but I think Kevin as well.
These two are, like you just said, that they have so much potential to, they could both be lead heels on their brands easily.
Mm-hmm. Easily.
They are that good. And right now WWE had a chance to get, you know, let Kevin Owens repackage himself and come back and be this guy that's, you know, a nasty heel. And yeah, he had a cool babyface run. Was it a little short? Yeah, probably. But obviously we knew the other shoe was going to drop, and it did. And Sami Zayn, same deal. The fans came back. They loved him. Remember him? He played his music, what, like 4 or 5 times?
Yeah.
When Alexa Bliss is talking with A Moment of Bliss. And then he turns on them, and I loved it. And since then, it's lose, 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 lose. Well, if I know the heel is going to get dropped at the end of the day, the WWE has really no faith in them, well, why am I going to get invested in this character? So it's just it's frustrating to see, because there is just so much there that they can draw from, and they are just having these guys lose. So, all right, let's get to the Super Showdown matches here, and let's start right at the top, Goldberg and Undertaker. Who wins?
This one is one of the harder ones for me to predict, just because I think someone had mentioned it before, the Super Showdown or any event that they do over in Jeddah is just pretty much like a glorified house show. Obviously, this one has more top-notch matches built into it, of course, with Undertaker and Goldberg, so it's a little more serious than a house show, but I think the idea behind that phrasing is it's a feel-good show. So I think the majority of these matches, I don't think there's, well, I mean, I get into that, but I think this match in particular was hard for me to really predict, just because they're both baby faces. They're both good guys. So who goes over? And it depends on if they're planning on having a second match, whether it's at WrestleMania or any other show in the near future, or if they wait and have the rematch next year or whenever they go back over to Saudi Arabia. So that I think can kind of have some pull into that decision, but it's kind of one of those things where you don't want Undertaker to lose, because you need to keep that mystique to him and that attraction to him. And I don't think he can maybe afford to lose, just because where he's at in his career. If it was 15 years ago, maybe so. And of course, if it wasn't at a WrestleMania, but if it was just like a Royal Rumble or a SummerSlam, I could see Goldberg winning. But I think right now, especially since Goldberg just came off of his strong run with Brock Lesnar a few years ago, I think Goldberg can take the loss here because I think Undertaker needs it, oddly enough, and as crazy as it is to say it, I think Undertaker needs the win more than Goldberg does right now.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so my prediction right off the bat is that Undertaker wins. I would not put any money on this. I'm a little bit hesitant too. There's a lot, the finish of this match to me is more intriguing than the match itself, anything, because there are a lot of ways that you can go that would make sense, but Undertaker does need to win more. Why does he need to win more? Because, number one, he's a WWE homegrown character that is the most successful of all time. Mm-hmm. He's coming up on the 30-year anniversary of him debuting at Survivor Series 1990. Yeah. I think that, you know, people have been predicting this for about 20 years, but I think Undertaker retires either at Survivor Series or that following WrestleMania, saying he had a 30-year career. They could really bill that.
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
It's a nice round number. There's a lot you can do with it. So I think Undertaker needs that something to build on. Building up to that, obviously that's not until next year, but this is something that Undertaker needs more than Goldberg. Goldberg is a WCW guy. Yeah, he's in WWE, but like if he stayed retired, people wouldn't care. Like people have been speculating and dying to know when the Undertaker's finally going to retire forever. So I think that yes, Undertaker wins with the tombstone and everyone goes home happy. So what about Seth Rollins and Baron Corbin for the Universal Championship?
I mean, I think it's got to be obvious. Seth beats Baron. I think the main talking point in this storyline and this match will be if Brock cashes in. I think you said earlier you think he will. I kind of don't think he will. I think he'll show up. I think he'll be dressed. I think he'll come out with the briefcase. I think Paul will be there, all that good stuff, and you'll think it is. But I think it's going to be one of those situations where Brock runs down to the ring, beats up Seth, thinks he's down, and before he can really tell the ref to, you know, he's cashing in to ring the bell, I think Seth is gonna get like this second win to him and fight back, and then Brock isn't necessarily gonna run off, but just take the briefcase and kind of back up and just kind of like carry it on for however much longer, because the Money in the Bank briefcase was just a few weeks ago, like, or the Money in the Bank pay-per-view was just a few weeks ago. Like, why would you throw away both briefcases already when you can have at least Brock hold on to this, and especially with the ratings and the wild card and everything, like you can have that floating out there. Like, you never know when Brock is going to show up. So I think it would be a real disservice to so many different aspects of the storyline, to Brock, to WWE, and even to Seth Rollins, if Brock cashes in tomorrow. So I say he doesn't cash in. I say what I just said, he's going to run out, and I think Seth goes home or comes back home with the Universal title.
Very good possibility. Either way, here's what I will say. You can bring this one to the bank. Baron Corbin is not walking out with the Universal Championship.
Definitely not.
it's that one I would bet a significant amount of money on, that Baron Corbin is nowhere near that Universal Championship. As much as WWE just, for some reason, just continues to put him in the main event and main event and main event and build him strong and all this, I still don't believe that Seth Rollins will drop the Universal Championship to Baron Corbin. Especially given that WrestleMania title wins need to stick for a long time.
Right.
And I'm a proponent, and WWE with their history of booking seems to be also a proponent of that thinking as well, that, you know, when I say long term nowadays is what, 3 to 6 months of a championship run.
Right.
And I think that Seth will keep that belt for quite some time. And he may end up dropping it at SummerSlam at the absolute earliest, but is Jedi the place to do it, and against Baron Corbin the place to do it? No. Now, obviously, we have the wild card of Brock Lesnar. Where does he stand in this whole thing? You very well could be right. He comes out, teases it. He sees an opportunity and has the intent to cash in. Seth Rollins kind of sees it coming. He's able to fend off Brock before the bell rings, so we get no official match. And the briefcase wasn't actually cashed in, as the announcers go, whoa, did he actually cash in? Well, the bell didn't ring, and they all act like fools. And Brock ends up just kind of going back up the ramp, acting like it's a boombox, and we all get frustrated again. I mean, that could easily be scenario one. Scenario two is that he cashes in, the match actually starts. So we hear that bell ring. So it's an official cash in, and Seth Rollins ends up somehow escaping Brock Lesnar, getting a stomp when Brock Lesnar is back his turn for just a moment, ends up escaping Brock Lesnar and scurries up the ramp. I mean, that could be scenario two. Either way, I still believe, even if Brock cashes in officially, that Seth walks out with that championship.
Same here.
All right, so Roman Reigns, Shane McMahon. I'll go first on this one. As much as I've said it, Roman Reigns is sleepwalking right now.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I still say that I want to see him, Shane McMahon, get destroyed. I still want that. So props to Shane for making me feel that way. I still legitimately want to see that. I think Roman Reigns gets his revenge here. Shane has gotten the advantage on Roman Reigns almost every single week, multiple times a week since this feud started, where Roman Reigns Superman punched Vince McMahon. And I actually love Shane for saying, "What kind of man hits another man's father?"
Yeah.
I can't help but laugh at that statement.
Me too.
Is just so funny to hear. And I'm sure that Shane is trying not to laugh at that.
Oh, he is.
It is just, I love it. I think that Roman Reigns puts a hell of a beating on Shane McMahon in this match. He puts Shane down, and I think this is just a feel-good match. Roman Reigns moves on from Shane, and we get him into an actual program with a real competitor.
Yeah, I really agree with you 100% there. There's no way Shane wins here. There's no way. I'm going Roman 100%.
Even with the wild card of Drew McIntyre lingering outside, I think that somehow,
yeah.
Even if I think the Miz could get involved here.
True.
and aid Roman Reigns here. And then he's the equalizer for Drew McIntyre and even the Revival. I mean, there are ways you could have the Bloodline. You could have the Usos also come to his aid. And right there, you got the Usos and you got the Miz coming to the aid of Roman Reigns, because you know that Shane McMahon has something up his pocket. And if it's those three guys, well, guess what? They're now neutralized. So I think that is how that match goes. And he gets a couple of spears. I want to see Shane just absolutely demolished and maybe even draw blood the hard way. I really want to see Shane get busted open the hard way. I haven't felt that way in a while. And I love that feeling.
Yeah,
like that's how I want to feel.
That's how you should feel.
Yeah. And they've made me feel that way. And I love it. So, I'm looking forward to this match more than most, because I think people are, it's going to be a stinker. But Shane McMahon has proven that, as much as we say that he doesn't belong in the ring and all that, he can hold his own. He's athletic. He may be a bit discombobulated and his punches look like garbage, but he still can compete. He can take a beating. He's in decent shape for not being a true athlete. That's a true wrestler. So I'm looking forward to it. I don't know about you on that one. I think I'm looking forward to it more than most people are on at least Twitter and social media that I've seen.
Get to Old Navy's Saturday only. Women's and girls' tanks are on sale for just $2. That's right, just $2. No better tanks, no better price. Just $2. One day only. Saturday only at Old Navy. Valid 6/29. Select styles only. In-store only. Limit 5. Get to Old Navy's Saturday only. Women's and girls' tanks are on sale for just $2. That's right, just $2. No better tanks, no better price. Just $2. One day only. Saturday only at Old Navy. Valid 6/29. Select styles only. In-store only. Limit 5.
No, yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it as well. I kind of want this to be the blow-off for them too, so Roman can move on to whatever it may be, whether it's rehashing things out with Drew or whatever it is. But I think Roman needs this as well. Roman, I don't think that they should have anyone come out to help Roman. I think if they are going to have like Drew McIntyre and the Revival interfere, I think you need to have Roman be as strong as he possibly can in this situation. Beat Shane, beat anyone who tries to come and interfere, get the good feeling victory, be super happy, embrace Roman, and move on. So that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, that's fine with me too. I mean, I don't care. Roman just needs a shot in the arm.
For sure.
I think him moving on from this program is number one. Number two is just him getting a real competitor in the ring and say, hey, Roman, go out there, just speak how you feel.
Yep.
Unfortunately, that's not their model. So, all right. Triple H and Randy Orton. I'm going to toss it to you first, because I need to gather my thoughts on this one.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm right there with you. This one is another tricky one. I think, because again, I'm torn between because Randy Orton is a heel, right? Like, he's still a heel. Like, he hasn't gone back to babyface. So my mindset behind that is, if this is a feel good show, then Triple H would win. But then I'm thinking, I don't know, because I guess I keep flashing back to the whole Triple H Batista thing, where it, you know, they had that little segment at the SmackDown 1000, planted that little seed, blew it off of WrestleMania. If Triple H is going to be winding down on his in-ring career, I could see Randy Orton winning here. Triple H being super pissed off, you know, having it fester for however many months, and then them having their kind of blow-off feud match at WrestleMania of next year. So, as much as it would not surprise me at all for Triple H to win, because let's be honest, either one of them could lose and it not really affect them at all. I think I'm going to go with Randy here, and this kind of be maybe the little seed planting moment to build to their WrestleMania match next year.
This is, you kind of stole my thunder there. It's true. Like, they this is a match that, honestly, I don't know the last time I could say it on this, at least on a pay-per-view scale, that the outcome does not matter at all. Like, yeah. Nobody, no matter who wins, how they win, or how quickly, it doesn't matter, because neither guy is a real centerpiece of either show. Triple H wears 14 hats, being the NXT, you know, creator, and then being a DX guy, and being the COO, and then, I mean, and then just being Paul Levesque. Like, I don't know who Triple H is. So when you say who's babyface and heel, I don't know who either of them are. Like, Randy Orton, I guess he's heel, but what has he done lately to make me hate him? Like, the RKO is so over. Every time he hits it, it becomes babyface. Like, that's how you turn Randy babyface. Just have him hit an RKO. Mm-hmm. Like, it's amazing. So I don't think either guy is anything, and I don't think it's needs to be positioned as this, because there's no implications, no ramifications, no consequences for anybody who loses this match. There's nothing on the line at all whatsoever. But at the same time, I still want to see this match, because I know their history. And they drew on the history and a ton of video packages. And that's great. Like, I remember all of that. Mm-hmm. And they had an amazing feud and all of that. But, they're trying to resurrect something that's been dead for 20 years. And that's fine. That's fine. Like, I mean, I'm all about it. And Saudi Arabia is paying them gazillions of dollars to create these fantasy matchups. It's fine. I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be quality match wise better than Goldberg Undertaker quality.
For sure.
I think there's no question there. Randy is still, and he can still move around like he's, 25 years old. He's taking really good care of his body. But I think a lot of that is attributed to the fact that he doesn't exactly sacrifice his body on a nightly basis. He's very safe. Mm-hmm. He's calculated. When he takes bumps, they're very, very, I shouldn't say soft, but they are just, they're calculated. He takes it in a way that is preserving his body. And you know what? More power to him. He's trying to extend his career, and that's fine. I'd like to see Randy Orton turn it up once in a while and really go all out. But he's so good that he doesn't need to do that. So, I honestly expect this match to go maybe 12 minutes, maybe 15. They could probably go 15. And ultimately, I see Randy winning. I'm with you on that, just because Randy Orton is a more of a mainstay than Triple H is. I mean, again, neither guy gains anything from winning or losing, but I'm just going to go with Randy because he's there more.
Yeah, totally. So what do you think about Kofi Kingston versus Dolph Ziggler?
I think this could steal the show.
Same here.
I think this has show stealing still written all over it, no pun intended to Dolph on that.
Right.
I really think it could be. Both of these guys, and what's been great about this, and we haven't really touched on this yet at all, is Dolph Ziggler's promos, while we all get on him for screaming in every promo, sometimes it's warranted. Mm-hmm. And in this case, like, I'm fine with him getting a little bit loud. He hasn't done it in every one of his promos since he came back. But what he's telling us is true. And that what I actually believe him as a person, not the character, feeling this way about Kofi. It's very genuine and believable that Dolph Ziggler would feel this way about Kofi, because it should have been, or could have been, him. Kofi and Dolph have had similar careers in that they're very talented in the ring. They've never really gotten to the mountaintop outside of Dolph cashing in the one Monday Night Raw after WrestleMania, what, 6-7 years ago, and then fell off the face of the earth. Outside of that, they really haven't climbed that mountaintop and been a mainstay champion that the fans could get behind. And Dolph could have easily traded places with Kofi on this had the roles been different. I think the fans respected Dolph. He's been here certainly long enough for the fans to gain respect for Dolph. He's paid his dues in front of them. And so I understand the argument is very logical that he could have been Kofi Kingston. So this match I'm looking forward to from an in-ring perspective. I hope, my fear is that they don't give this match enough time. I could see this going 20, 25 minutes, and I hope it does. Like, I want to see this 20 minutes at the minimum. And let them do maybe some chain wrestling at the beginning, build to the punches, and then build to the high impact moves, and then build to maybe one or two kick out of finishers, and you know, leave it at that. They could really tell a really, really good story with two veterans in there who I think their styles mesh very well.
Same here, and like you said, I've been such a fan of Dolph's promo since he's been back, and like you said, it's so believable because it's true. Whereas Dolph may have had a few more opportunities than Kofi did, and Dolph has been a world champion prior to the upcoming match tomorrow, and Kofi obviously won his first at WrestleMania, but it is believable. Dolph was going through a losing sprout. He was getting frustrated, and that's why, you know, before he had left or a few months ago, he was frustrated, he was losing, he was yelling, all that stuff, and he did get a lot of flack for that, and yeah, maybe a few months ago, some of them, he should have just toned down a little bit. But now it is completely warranted, and it's so believable. Do I think he's going to win tomorrow? No, but I think this is one of the only matches on tomorrow's show where it could really be the start of a long feud. I think this could be spread out over the next maybe two pay-per-views, maybe three, depending on how well they put time and effort into it, and if that's where they're looking to go in the long run. But I think this is one of the matches where this could be the start of a feud for tomorrow. So I'm looking forward to this match. I think it is going to steal the show, like you said. I could see them going easily 20, 25 minutes and it being just one of, or if not the best match on the show. I think it may have a little bit of competition with Andrade and Finn Balor, just in-ring style and work-wise. But I think Kofi's going to retain here, and it'll just add more fuel to Dolph's fire.
Yeah, this is match one of probably three or four, and I'm fine with it. There's a lot to draw on here. I think ultimately Dolph is going to need cronies he's playing heel, he's playing it very well. He's going to need help. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who he ends up teaming with, but there's an opportunity there. He as a heel, and if you're outnumbered by babyfaces, you have to have equalizers, and I think that he'll eventually find them. My prediction, because I didn't give it, is that Kofi retains. I think Kofi retains in a match that's hard fought, in a match that you're probably scared at moments that he's going to lose it. I'm not 100% on this, but again, it's a WrestleMania win for Kofi. They just did that video of him back in Ghana. Let's face it, he's an African American, which mm-hmm. means he's great for PR, which makes WWE look great that they're putting the championship on a black star that, you know, you could say The Rock was black, I guess, in some sort he was, whatever. Like, it's good for PR. It looks good, right, for the company. They're all progressive, blah, blah, blah. So I don't think, not just because of that. I mean, he has a lot of fan support, but that is definitely a contributing factor when you look at WWE's culture and how they present their brand and all that. So I think Kofi retains for those reasons.
Same here.
All right, well, let's see. I'm rolling down the mist here. A few more matches here. Intercontinental Championship, Finn Balor and Andrade. There's not a ton of build here. I mean, I've watched Raw and all that. I mean, I don't have a whole lot here. I think Finn retains the championship. They're on SmackDown. I think they retain the championship. I mean, yeah, he's coming out as the Demon, right? So even though the Demon's not warranted, I'd like to see it actually be warranted instead of just deciding randomly to say, yeah, I'm coming out as the Demon. Well, why? Right? So he retains. I expect this to be a very, very good match. If Kofi and Dolph weren't on the card, this one could easily steal the show. I don't think this is going to get a ton of time because of, I think, where they're going to position it on the show. But this has an opportunity to be very good. Andrade continues to impress the hell out of me inside the ring with what he can do. I don't think that Andrade wins, but I would not. You know what? Wait a minute. I'm talking myself out of this. Andrade wins. And the reason I say that is because there has to be a championship change here. They're in Saudi Arabia. They're in Jeddah. They're on a pay-per-view. Finn could lose this, and it's not going to hurt him because Finn is, I'm sorry, he's cold as ice right now. I think Andrade wins the Intercontinental Championship. I understand it's the Demon, but this could be the very first time the Demon is defeated, and it's via Andrade. So that's my bold prediction. I'm probably wrong, but I'm going to go with a totally out there prediction. So what do you think?
If it was just regular Finn Balor, I would totally go with Andrade winning. And I'm right there with you. I love Andrade as a character, and I think his in-ring work is so remarkable, and he is a future star. He is a future world champion. It's just a matter of time with him. I don't want that to be a rushed thing. I'm not saying it needs to happen anytime soon, even within the next year or two. I see him as one of those characters that you build, and you see him, and once he wins that first Intercontinental Championship, it's a big deal, and I think he should have a long reign with it. I don't see him winning tomorrow just for the fact that it's the Demon. And I don't think the Demon's first loss should be against Andrade in this situation. If they have been building to this moment for the past few months, I may feel differently about that. But I don't think the Demon should lose to Andrade with the lack of story behind this and the lack of storyline. So I think it's going to be super hard fought. But I see Finn pulling this out in probably another 20-plus minute match. Or the Demon,
yeah,
rather.
I know I'm probably wrong. I'm going to stick by
my
guns.
I'm sticking by my guns.
Yep. The Demon is undefeated. And could they do a lot with the Demon character? And whoever finally defeats him is special. But we've seen that logic go down the toilet before with WWE. And I don't have faith in their long-term storytelling of who they have envisioning beating Finn Balor as the Demon. I think that the case for this is that it would be a moment. It would be very unexpected. It would instantly, put the credibility behind Andrade. So there is something there that you could build on big time if they envision Andrade as the future, especially as the Intercontinental Champion having a long reign. This is a hell of a way to start, and this would be a great point and launching pad for him to start beating Finn Balor as the Demon. So I guess that's the counter argument. Although I'm not confident, but I'm going to stick by it, and I'm going to say that Finn Balor suffers his first loss as the Demon tomorrow night. I keep saying Sunday, but no, it's tomorrow night.
Right.
It's weird.
It's weird.
It's just weird that it's a Friday. All right, Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley. You first.
Oh, thanks.
You first.
Oh, man. I don't even know. For this match, to me, kind of feels like, or maybe I shouldn't compare it to that, but why? You know, I don't get it. There's really not much story behind it. It's besides two big, strong, massive dudes just fighting. The whole arm wrestling match on Monday was, you know, it was what it was. I just, again, this is another one of those matches that really has no real build to it. I could be wrong. I could be forgetting a few things, but I think Braun Strowman wins here because, again, it would hurt Braun more to lose than it would hurt Bobby right now. So I'm going with Braun.
Yeah, I mean, this one, the fall from grace for Braun Strowman is just cataclysmic. I mean, when you think about where he was, it's the same for really Jinder Mahal, who was, claiming WWE championship to all the way to a golf course, pinning a guy for a championship that means nothing. I mean, so, yeah. I'm going to say Braun Strowman, and just because Braun, I think, in the eyes of management and really in the eyes of fans, is more over than Bobby Lashley.
Mm-hmm.
And you take the mouthpiece away from Bobby Lashley, and rightfully so, based on everything I heard about Lio Rush and all the things he was doing. So Bobby is on his own right now and having to use his own words and all of that. And yeah, I think Braun Strowman wins because he's Braun Strowman.
Yeah.
I expect kickouts of finishers and high impact moves, and I think that's where it ends. And I think we get a Braun Strowman win, and that's that. I mean, that's that. Like, there's nothing. This could very well be a concession bathroom break match. I mean, it's terrible to say, but it could be. So, all right. Before we get to the 50-man battle royal, Lars Sullivan and Lucha House Party. I think this one is pretty much a slam dunk.
Yeah.
But I'll let you go ahead.
Yeah, I think this one is going to be one of the shortest matches, if not the shortest match on the show. I think Lucha House Party gets in their few moves. I think, you know, they fend him off for maybe the first minute, maybe 2 minutes. But if this goes longer than 5 minutes, I'd be shocked. So I think they get their offense in the beginning. He pushes two of them at the ring and then just demolishes one of them, and he just seals the win.
Yeah, I don't think it can be a complete squash because it's a pay-per-view match, and we've already seen him squash them a couple of times. So there needs to be a little bit of competitiveness, as you said. There needs to be something that is a couple of hope spots for the Lucha House Party. There has to be. To add a little bit of drama to the match other than just a complete bulldozing. So there will be a couple of hope spots where maybe they get him down to a knee, and then all of a sudden the freak comes out and you see him, his facials change, and he hulks up, for a better, lack of a better term.
Right.
The announcers go crazy and Michael Cole pees himself and all that. And we get Lars Sullivan completely, ultimately stacking all three men on top of each other and doing a triple pin or something like that. You're right. I think this is all about Lars Sullivan, and rightfully so. Mm-hmm. And this will mercifully be the last time that these three face Lars Sullivan, because I think Lars Sullivan needs to move up, move onward, and I think we'll get that next Monday night.
Same here.
All right, 50-man battle royal. Oh, God, I hate when they do this. And the reason is because, it's such a... to me, Royal Rumble should be the only time there's a Rumble or a battle royal, as whatever brand you want to call it. So this is 50... man battle royal. So this is probably going to take from Friday until Sunday to complete with all of the introductions. So I'm going to say, oh gosh, probably The Miz. Again, probably The Miz, because The Miz is doing well. Mm-hmm. I think he's doing better than anybody expected as a babyface. I think they need a feel good win here for the battle royal. Again, is anything on the line that you're aware of? I don't think anything's on the line, right?
I was just thinking that, because I think the first one, Braun won that title, that green title before the 24/7 green title. I don't even remember the name of the actual title itself, but I remember, and I may be wrong, but I think he won that during that battle royal at the end. I think that was, but again, that title really, that it meant nothing. There was never any other mention of it after that. So I don't know if that title would be quote unquote up for grabs here. Other than that, I really don't know the point of this, except to get everyone on the card to get a decent payday for being over there.
Maybe it's Austin's Ringmaster $1 Million Championship that's on the line.
Right. Cool.
Honestly, maybe it's that. Yeah. I don't know, because it's just crazy that there's nothing on the line. There should be something on the line here that these guys are fighting for. Maybe a future championship opportunity. It doesn't even have to be for the top championship. It can be for they just label it as a championship opportunity. I don't care. Give them something to fight for other than just, I was the longest lasting guy in the ring and I win. Give us something. And I don't think there's anything on the line here. So I think The Miz wins after an exhausted crowd sees 50 entrances, and The Miz goes home and is able to say that he defeated 50 other guys. And apparently that's not as important as beating 30 other guys in January. And one other thing, a little bit off topic, but I was thinking about this. They always bill Survivor Series as the only night that SmackDown and Raw superstars go head to head.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking, well, now before this wildcard rule was implemented, that was still a completely false statement based on Rumble, based on WrestleMania, based on SummerSlam. So I'm really, really curious if they have the guts or the intelligence to say this year that this is not the only time that SmackDown and Raw goes head-to-head. So I know that Survivor Series is 6 months away, but I was just thinking about that is always a tagline they use. So
I kind of hope they do, just so I can get a laugh out of it. I kind of hope they do, or at least once, at least mention it once. So just for S's and giggles.
Yeah, maybe to troll the fans, I don't know. But it's just ridiculous. So
yeah.
So that's... really the show. I mean, overall, I think, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. It seems to me like I don't, it's really weird, but I don't consider this like a real pay-per-view. It's weird, yeah. But I don't. Like, it's kind of like a pay-per-view that is almost like one of those overseas pay-per-views that they do that don't really count towards real storylines in the U.S. or when they do like a Monday Night Raw in the U.K. Like, I don't consider that a real Raw because it's typically like a hold me over treading water Raw that doesn't advance any storylines. It's just kind of like its own island of stuff going on. So I'm trying to make this a real pay-per-view in my mind, but I'm having a hard time doing it.
Same here. And like, I can't remember. I wish I could remember who said it, but it is in a sense, a glorified house show. Obviously this one has a little bit more meaning than the other ones, but it's definitely going to be, I think, a decent show. It'll be cool to, you know, have something on in the background while I'm working. You know, wrestling wise, that's live at 2 p.m. I believe it's 2 p.m. Right? Or is it noon? Is it 2?
No, I think it's 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock. Okay, yeah. So that, you know, that'd be something fun just to kind of throw some, like, a little wrench into my normal Friday work plans. But you know, it's fine. I think it'll be a decent show. It'll be a good show. But I think they, more than anyone else, just can't wait for tomorrow to be over with and just be done with this for now until the next show.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Saying it's a glorified house show, oh my God. Can you imagine someone telling that to Vince McMahon, who's trying to build this as equal to WrestleMania? I mean, like, so they're building it as equal to WrestleMania or better than WrestleMania. And the reality is it is kind of a glorified house show. That's like, it's like an exhibition match. It's like preseason baseball, preseason football. Like, whoever wins and loses doesn't really matter. It's just like in the spirit of competition. Like, that's how I feel, and I don't want to feel that way. But anytime they're in Saudi Arabia, I mean Jeddah, I don't take it seriously, and I'm trying very hard. Like, I'm really trying to take it seriously. So, you know what? Like, I think I will once Kofi and Ziggler get in the ring, and you know, I think eventually I get brought in. But just, I've just been conditioned to not take these types of pay-per-views too seriously, especially when you take these guys who are, I mean, well past their prime, and stick them in matches that have no bearing, make no sense to stick them in there. Nothing warrants it. No storylines have been told. It's just difficult. But I think once the pay-per-view starts, I'll start to get invested. And I hope, and especially during the Roman Reigns Shane match, which, again, I really am hoping that Shane gets destroyed. So, Ashley, before we wrap this thing up, is there anything else that I missed or that you wanted to vent about or discuss?
Oh man, that would be a whole another hour in and of itself about the venting. You know, I'm sure there is a few things that we missed. This was a more news heavy week, just with the whole Jon Moxley thing, Raw, SmackDown, tomorrow's show. So I think we pretty much covered everything. And I'm sure once we hang up here, I'll remember something, be like, oh, I should have talked to him about that. But if I do, I'll shoot you a message. But I don't think so right now.
Yeah, no, I did. Trust me, there are things that are highlighted here that, like, if I start, it will go into a tangent. You just said, into another hour. Like, yeah. It just happens with wrestling because you branch off into 40 other things. But that's also the beauty of wrestling.
I was about, like, to say the same thing. Yeah. As much as you crap a blessing. On it, it's just one of those things where it's just like you crap on it because you're so passionate and because it means so much to you. So it's not really being negative. It's just, like, you're frustrated with your relationship. You love that person so much that you don't want it to be that hard. You just want it to be simple. So I just think it's always going to be one of those things.
Yeah, it is. And especially when you have top stars who are telling you the same thing that you are complaining about,
right,
and validate what you're complaining about is true. It's not like you're sitting there just trying to be negative to, you know, rant and crap on stuff that you don't actually feel something for. We all love this product and we want to see it improve. But when you have top stars confirming your fears, it's difficult to do at times. So, Ashley, it's been a pleasure. Again, welcome to your first official show. I'm really looking forward to what this show is going to bring and your contributions to it and all of that. So, but before you head out, what is your Twitter username?
Yes, and before I give that out, just again, thank you so much to you. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I just love talking wrestling to you. It's just so, I think I've said it before, therapeutic to just get all that off your chest and just talk about everything that's happening in this crazy sports entertainment world that we all live in. So thank you again, and thank you to everyone else who had any input into this. But my Twitter handle is ASHMANNS. So feel free to give me a follow and we can talk wrestling or talk sports, whatever.
And she will, trust me.
I will. She will. So be careful.
That's a threat. So, all right. Well, Ashley, thank you. We will be in touch soon and be back in a few weeks as we have this rotating schedule.
Yes, sir. Sounds great. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Ashley.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Get to Old Navy Saturday only. Women's and girls' tanks are on sale for just $2. That's right, just $2. No better tanks, no better price. Just $2. One day only. Saturday only at Old Navy. Valid 6/29. Select styles only. In-store only. Limit 5. Get to Old Navy Saturday only. Women's and girls' tanks are on sale for just $2. That's right, just $2. No better tanks, no better price. Just $2. One day only. Saturday only at Old Navy. Valid 6/29. Select styles only. In-store only. Limit 5.